Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night, cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Hello and welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Dylan White from the Great White North. It's appropriate.
There you go, named after me. Not bad. It's Great White North, but it's as if it's the Great White South. It's so hot up here. Hottest day in 10 years in Toronto on Monday.
Really? What do the temps get up to in old Toronto?
I can give you Celsius. It's like 38 Celsius, feels like 44 or something like that. We have air conditioning in the house and it was like 82. the thermostat is still in Fahrenheit for
some reason. it was like 100 degrees. It's like 100.
Yeah, I think so.
For all of our American listeners that are unfamiliar with the metric system like myself.
yeah, that's right, because the body temperature 37 Celsius is 98.6, so it was over 98.6.
There you go.
So it was melting.
Hot everywhere. It was, you know, 100 degrees up here in Massachusetts the last couple of days. It's down to like 89 today, which was nice. A wee bit humid, though. We've had about 60-65% humidity, so it's been a little sticky. We can't complain, though. It's been even hotter down in North Carolina, where a lot of our staff is. So, hot temps all everywhere, right? All across the country and Canada, too. And I'm sure if everything south is pretty hot, too. But we're back. We had a couple of weeks off. We had a snafu where we recorded a podcast, and I legitimately forgot until like 3 o'clock on Friday and was like, wait. This is no longer relevant. So we're going to dive into some debuts that have taken place over the last couple of weeks, days, you know, not months. But Jacob Mizorowski came up last week. Now, 3 starts into his professional career? His major league career, excuse me. And has looked excellent, frankly. Outdueled Paul Skeens today. There's shades of a young... Or prime. I won't even say young, because young Jacob DeGrom was not this good. It's like prime Jacob DeGrom. You look at the fastball shape. He's throwing mid-90s sliders. He's throwing mid to high 80s curveballs with crazy two-plane movement. I think it's arguably some of the best starter stuff I've ever seen in the big leagues. What's your take on Mizorowski?
It's I'm continuing to do my Eat Crow tour, where I did not think he'd make it as a starter. He was showing that I was wrong in AAA with some of the best RoboScout numbers, and obviously his major league start has been incredible. I still think Chase Burns, who we'll probably get to later, is going to be probably the most impactful rest of season starter, but Mizorowski might be.
Oh, dude, I will bet you $100 on air that Mizorowski is not only injuries will be the only thing that will crush this. Okay, Dylan, but I'm going to put this out there. Mizorowski, I think, is just better than Chase Burns is. And I was saying Burns was the best starting pitching prospect in the minors 2 months ago. And I think Mizorowski might be the Brewers' ace. He's looked so good. And the stuff, the release characteristics, the movement and the velocity, he checks every box on every pitch. And the thing with him versus Burns, and this is something that I've been hammering for 5 years now, he has a flat vertical approach angle. He has a low release height. You do not see his fastball. It's why he doesn't give up homers. Burns was giving up homers in college. He gave up, start was going great. He's striking everybody out, right? And then he gets to Ben Rice, and Ben Rice hits one into the seats. Like, that's what Burns starts are going to be like. The other part of it is he's in Great America Ballpark. So, like, he's more or less pitching in a worse environment than Coors in his home games. So, like, being home run prone in that park, I think, is an issue. JJ said it to me today off air. I think there's a chance that, like, if the Brewers make a deep playoff run, it's because Jacob Mizorowski keeps this up. I mean, he's looked phenomenal. I mean, there's really not even any knocks. Like, he's almost, like, effectively wild, too. I had to call that one out. I was like, I don't know about Burns being better than Mizorowski, because I just think the Burns fastball is hittable. You know, it's hard. It gets ride cut, but guys can sit on that. You know, I think it's the slider that's going to be. But the other part of it is the home ballpark, dude. Like, Great America Ballpark just scares the crap out of me with everybody, pretty much. That's not to say that he's not going to be great and be impactful. I think the K per nine stuff is obviously, you know, huge, especially in roto leagues. But I don't know, Dylan. I think I have to challenge you on that one a little bit.
Oh, well, that's fine. That's fine. We can June 25th. We can go. I don't know how we. I don't know if we're actually formally doing this, but you know, war from here on out per inning pitched or something, or just straight war, or do you want to go strikeouts?
Well, you can do war. Value? You can do fantasy value on the Razzball player rater.
All right. That's fine. I mean, what you're saying is not out of line and so ridiculous that I can't believe
no,
it.
No, of course not.
It's obviously it's legit and valid. I just think Chase Burns is, you know, I got to stick with RoboScout. I got to, you know, follow the projections, et cetera. I understand the ballpark. I think that's kind of baked into what I'm thinking too, but I just think Chase Burns is,
well, this actually leads us to an interesting point in this conversation. So correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm not against projections. It is very difficult for projections to account for significant skill improvement, like throwing strikes, contact, because they're looking at historical data. Burns doesn't have a whole lot of historical data to pull from. He's got like what, 12 minor league starts, 12 professional starts, where like Mizorowski, I mean, you have 60,
mm-hmm.
right? And was much more of a work in progress, you know, as a 20-year-old coming into pro ball from JUCO than Burns was. So I think projections are a good marker between these two guys. Like, and I understand why the projections would be higher on Burns just based on the minor league performance. But at the same time, I mean, Mizorowski was excellent in AAA for, you know, the first 2 months of the season. I don't know. That's not to say that I don't use projections. Of course I do. I just wonder if, like, with minor league pitchers like this, where there is a small tweaks and improvements that can be kind of a big jump from year to year versus what you're going to see with like a 4 or 5 year big leaguer, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, everything you're saying is absolutely correct. They like the steamer projection for Mizorowski will take into account his previous, you know, 2 years, 3 years. So yes. But like just even RoboScout this year, looking only at 2025, Burns was quote unquote performing better. Though, I mean, it does look at his peak, and he is younger than Mizorowski, right? Burns is. So it's maybe his 2025, his major league equivalency. I don't have it right in front of me right now. Is for this year, maybe a lot closer than the peaks show. But like the Chase Burns peaks.
It's 9 months. It's 9 months in age.
9 months in age. Okay. So it, yeah, no, I mean, even discounting Mizorowski's history and only going this year, it's just the walk rate still was pretty high. Like it was in the single digits. But Yeah, no, I mean, there's no question he's dominated it today, recording on Wednesday, going against Skeens, and he, you know, kind of outdueled him for sure, continued to look ridiculous, seeing like the StatCast 3D, like things that David Adler posts on Twitter, like where it shows little stick figures. It's just like so hilarious how the batters are like hapless at the 102 mile an hour animation that just the ball just suddenly appears in the catcher's glove. It's pretty overwhelming as a batter to watch that, and you know, his extension so big, all that stuff that you've talked about at length. Clearly he has the stuff, and he is showing that he can actualize it in the majors, at least so far. So everything you're saying makes complete sense. But I, you know, I'm playing the long game. It's the season's still on. There's 3 months at least, so we'll see how it goes.
It's awesome. Yeah, no, I had to challenge you on that. And I think it's an interesting vessel for us to kind of discuss the two players too. You know, Burns was good, but you know, not perfect, obviously, in his start. Did have that one mistake to Ben Rice. But prior to that, I mean, what was it, like 8 of his first 9 or 10 batters he faced? 10 batters, I think it was, right? That he struck out. Yeah, the beginning of that start was crazy. Obviously, he struck out Aaron Judge in the first inning, and you know, huge stuff. But I think the margin for error there might just be potentially just a little bit smaller, you know. All right, let's move on to some less interesting news, because we just spent pretty much 10 minutes on Mazurowski versus Burns. But Corbin Carroll goes down. Going to be out for a while, Dylan. What are you doing if you're a Carroll owner at this point? Because I feel like, especially in Dynasty, you know, you sort of had the bounce back season, right? And now, you know, it's a chip fracture in his left wrist. You then sort of have to wonder, how is that going to impact, you know, Carroll's production once he is back, which I think wouldn't be until probably August, right? The earliest. If I'm not mistaken,
something like that. Yeah. And like you said, we don't know how if he's going to be 100% anyway, and we don't know what his career is going to be after, because, you know, wrist injuries on hitters is kind of, you know, iffy, touch and go. I think you have to hold for now. Well, let me put it this way. Don't sell for 75 cents on the dollar. I just don't think it's worth the risk. I think he's young. He should recover. It's not like he's in his, you know, early 30s and healing takes longer, etc. So I think he will come back to, you know, 90% of who he is, kind of as a minimum. If you're competing and like he was like one of the pieces, obviously, then, you know, I could see trading him for like Jackson Merrill or something, where you're downgrading maybe for the dynasty window, but for this year, you know, rest of season, Merrill will probably be much better than Carroll, what Carroll will produce or your replacement will produce. So, you know, I could see doing that. That's something I could see myself doing, just if I'm competing, that I don't want to like have the season scuttled just because I'm too stubborn to get rid of, you know, Carroll. But yeah, I mean, it's terrible news. Like the uncertainty is the kind of thing that's the worst part. But I think you got to kind of hold, and you just like don't panic, but you kind of have to bake in a bit of a downgrade, I think, just until you can see him coming back. And kind of what we were like last year with his shoulder, the quote unquote shoulder injury, where is he ever going to recover? I think the people who sold then are probably kicking themselves, just because
he's
here, the bat speeds up and all that.
He's 24 and it's a wrist injury. I mean, like, yeah, it could impact his power numbers when he comes back and maybe bleeds into the beginning of next season. I mean, unless there is like some nerve damage there or major like tissue damage, I would think that he's going to recover and be fine. Like, I wouldn't. I think the Merrill suggestion makes sense in a vacuum if you're competing, because as you said, like, I think to the Merrill owner, if they're, let's say, out of, you know, the ability to either win the league or make the playoffs in a head-to-head league, it maybe makes sense there. It'll be like, all right, I feel like I'm getting the better player in Carroll. Yes, Merrill was a few years younger, but I don't think he ever gets to the level that Carroll's at when he's hitting on all cylinders. Like, I think that deal makes sense. I think anybody who would write off the rest of his career because of a wrist injury, I think is like Chicken Little. Like, you are overreacting, man.
Yeah. I haven't seen that yet, but I know people are worried just because it's a wrist, and quote unquote, Carroll is injury prone, even though, like, I don't think there's any correlations about anything, obviously. This was like getting hit by a pitch against the Jays. So
yeah,
completely unrelated. It's not like the representative of his,
the shoulder is more concerning. Cause like when shoulder issues continue to crop up, that is a problem that sometimes isn't fixable. It's like backs, you know, like there's no kind of magic bullet surgery that you can get done that's going to cure, you know, your ailment there. It's kind of a permanent thing that you have to manage. That can be very limiting. But wrist injuries, I mean, you know, it's a broken bone. Like it's going to heal. It'd be awkward for a little bit, you know, but I've seen guys back from wrist injuries and hit too. So, I mean, it's not all the way gone. Yeah, I don't know. Anything else you want to say on Carroll, or we can move on to the next?
No, I was going to go off script to say, since you're talking about shoulders, it's like Zach Neto. So Zach Neto missed time with a shoulder injury, came back this year having a great season. But now he just had an MRI for his shoulder because it acted up on a stolen base attempt yesterday. I have him in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
That's why I'm up to date so much. The MRI came back clean. Yeah. We were very high. And that was one of our better calls because he's dominating. One of the better shortstops in the league. But yeah, it came back clean, this shoulder, but it's the same shoulder. And like, that is kind of a bit concerning. And I could see people wanting to move Neto just because there's a foreseeable future where he's battling these shoulder injuries for the rest of his career.
And he's a guy that kind of swings from his shoes and like looks, he's not a huge guy, you know, like he's not super physical or muscular. So he's sort of got to create like that torque and, you know, rotational sort of force to be able to hit for the power that he does, the big leg kick, and really engages his lower half. So yeah, that could be a concern 100%, you know, when you consider how he swings. And I think that was the concern for a lot of people with Carroll too, you know, because of sort of the nature of his swing and sort of how he attacks and tries to get the most out of it with like a max effort sort of stroke.
Yep. Tatis, same thing. Like,
yeah.
And it's a shoulder as well. And so, but you know, when he's playing, like when these guys are playing and they're performing, and then you kind of forget that they were injured, and then they get injured, and then it's like, yeah, well, we knew it. It's a nagging shoulder and a chronic injury. So it's
tough.
When you make a hire, it doesn't take long before you know. You know what I mean? You know. You know if you nailed the hire. Is your new addition going to be a star? Or did you make a mistake? Find your company's next star with Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your posts jump to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Indeed has helped us hire stars at Baseball America time and time again. Some of the people you hear on our podcast came to us through hires we made through Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Hire rock stars right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.
Or like when you're Ronald Acuna Jr. and you're supposed to be managing your workload and you're like, hey, let's do the home run derby. Could be fun though. Could be fun to watch. All right, we got more injuries to speak of. And this one actually affects the Braves, but it's not Ronald Acuna Jr. It's Chris Sale, last year's reigning NL Cy Young winner. He's dealing with a rib cage injury, fractured left rib cage. They anticipate he's going to pitch again this season. That tells me that we could be looking at like a September return, which I think in some leagues, depending on like what your league is set up is like, I know like my head-to-head league, my home league, more or less the season is over by September, you know, like there's a couple of rounds of playoffs that maybe finish in the last, you know, first 2 weeks of September. So it's a little bit, and, you know, ends a little bit earlier. But even for a roto league, if you're chasing a championship, it's kind of a tough hold because, you know, he's as old as he is. There's obviously been some injury issues over the last 5 years, you know, last year kind of being the outlier. He's going to be 37 next year. Is this a case where just sort of hold and ride it until the wheels fall off and what you get is what you get? Or are you trying to sort of make any deal you can to maybe get something back for Sale at this point?
I think unlike Carroll, I think you have to move him more aggressively. If they say they expect him back in the season, that means there's a like almost 50% chance he won't come back during the season. And if he comes back in September, his first couple of games are going to be like 4 innings, 60 pitches, 70 pitches. Like they're not going to have him throwing complete games, etc. So he's not going to be contributing that much for you. So I think someone who is rebuilding would be, if you're holding Chris Sale, someone who's rebuilding will want Chris Sale possibly. As an opportunity to get him for cheap. And I think you could take it. Like if you can get someone, I don't know, someone not as good as Sale, but can contribute this season in, you know, maybe 80%, 75% of what you were hoping from Sale. So like Joe Ryan or Bailey Ober or something like that. Maybe they're completely going in different directions, but
yeah, I'd say like Ober, I feel like you get, I have Joe Ryan in a bunch of teams. I would not,
you wouldn't trade him for Sale. Yeah. No,
I don't even know if I would have done it prior to the injury.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree on that.
What about like a Mitch Keller? Maybe somebody like along of that ilk, another name that came to mind, but Ryan Pepio.
Pepio, type of thing.
Being the Pepio owner and be like, no. But yeah, I think you kind of just got to shop it and see who's willing to offer you something. Because it's a weird player to take on, because like a rebuilding team probably doesn't want Chris Sale, right? Mm-hmm. And a competitive team, if you're a competitive team, you're probably, you know, battling it out with this other manager. And mm-hmm. the likelihood that they're going to take a player that's sort of an albatross for this year is kind of tough. I would even almost say like, if you're in leagues where there's like salaries attached and he's expensive, he might almost be like a cut candidate.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You know,
I mean, which seems insane, but it's just, he's 37 and it's a broken bone and the stuff hasn't atrophied yet, but I think you get to a point where just nicks and bruises and just age where, you know, eventually I can't see a 42-year-old Chris Sale still being an effective starter, but you know, I don't know. I mean, he's back. He still was sitting 95 this year and, you know, the stuff is still good. So Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you still can get more form than I'm thinking. And maybe somebody will hold out hope that the should pitch again this season will come to fruition.
Yeah, I mean, I think the expectation, though, is he'll be back next year at the beginning of the season, I think. And, sure. You know, if he's like a one whip, three ERA guy next year, that's very useful. So, like, I think it's not like his career is over. It's not Tommy John. So I think you could get, you know, like a Jack Flaherty or something like that. Someone who is like pretty good pitcher, but you're not an ace. And, you know, you have to, you're not getting the greatest guy because, you know, you're losing Sale for a year or half a year. So yeah, I don't know. It's tough. I think I would move him though. Obviously it depends on the situation, but he's not going to contribute for you this year. Carroll at least probably will. And for, you know, a longer time, obviously, in a dynasty window. And, you know, Sale, you can maybe convince someone to take him on because he's going to be back next year.
All right. It's time for us to take a big fat L, Dylan. Uh-oh. I think you know what we're about to talk about.
I think I do.
Francisco Alvarez was demoted to AAA Syracuse. What's your take on this? I don't know if I fully anticipated it, but I guess it's not really the bat. You know, not that the bat has been great, but the defense has not been very good, and it's been costing them runs at times. So that's why he's down to work on that. I don't know. I know it's a lazy comp because he's a fellow New York highly touted prospect catcher that could hit. It's feeling very Gary Sanchez-esque right now, where he comes up, he shows something, there's some injuries, some struggles, and then bam, you know.
I was very surprised that it happened. I think he hit a home run that day. Like, so I did not expect it. His defense, yeah, it's not great. I mean, his pop times are still pretty good. His framing, I guess, is bad. You had called it earlier when he got injured that it's like it's his hand, and like I don't know if he's going to bounce back. But he's still so young. I just feel like he's 23. I don't think this is Gary Sanchez, in my opinion. Looking at like Steamer projections, just to get a kind of a ballpark at the beginning of the season, his peaks look like he was like a 127 WRC plus, 30 home runs. Now, it's like a 115 WRC plus. So that's a pretty significant hit. 26 home runs, which is still pretty good for a catcher. So I'm not writing it off. In fact, I was inquiring about trying to get him in some dynasty leagues because I think he's been battling kind of poor performance for a couple of years because of injuries, and someone might just be sick of it. I still kind of believe, I guess he's not going to be the monster fantasy guy maybe. And especially with a lot of catchers coming up, he's going to get diluted in that pool. He used to be kind of like a tier above in a dynasty league, and now he's kind of coming back in the middle of the pack. In an optimistic situation, he's coming back in the middle of the pack instead of dropping right out of it. I still like him. I was surprised at the move. I still kind of have hope. I mean, it's a disappointing thing, but I think this is just temporary.
Yeah. You know, I think that's a good way to put it, but it is a little disheartening as a Francisco Alvarez manager, where, you know, I got him rostered, and I had him and Christian Campbell on the same team, and it's just been very depressing to have had such high hopes, and then the last like month with both of those guys has just been an absolute pain, to the point that I wasn't really playing Alvarez and was playing Bo Naylor instead. But it's kind of what's tricky about these young catchers, and just catchers in fantasy in general. The next guy we're going to talk about, I think, has, you know, been mostly what he was billed to be in Adley Rutschman, but you know, he's dealing with an oblique strain. It's considered fairly mild, but they think he's probably going to be on the IL through the All-Star break. So not a huge issue, but it's kind of a lost season for Baltimore at this point. It's been a little bit of a lost season for Adley as well. The offense wasn't great last year either. You know, but his first 2 years in the big leagues, I mean, a 135 WRC plus as a rookie in 2022 as a 24-year-old, 127 WRC plus as a 25-year-old in year two, playing 154 games. Last year, he did hit 19 home runs, and the counting stats were fine from like a fantasy perspective. But so 104 WRC plus slash 250, 318, 391. And it's only gone downhill so far this year, 227, 319, 372. So you're not, for what you probably acquired Rutschman for, even if it was an FYPD pick and was probably a top three pick in that FYPD, do you feel that he's delivering to his fantasy managers? Because I think it has been a little bit disappointing from a fantasy production standpoint. I think the defense has been good and he's been valuable there, but the last couple years have been sort of down years now for Adley, and it's starting to create a trend. Like, how concerned are you?
Yeah, he's tough because, yeah, his OPS in 2024 and 2025 is basically 700, which is, you know, like fringe kind of playable. Maybe it's fine for a catcher. His projections are still fine. He is 27 now, so it's he's not like it's 23 and he's got his whole career ahead of him.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is kind of it. What was interesting to me when I was doing some research into it is his bat speed is actually not that great. He's below average. He's like 25th percentile this year now, and last year and year before. Go ahead.
Does that look at, can you break it down by each swing because he's a switch hitter?
I can't right now.
Yeah, but I'm saying like I think that might be worth, because it'd be interesting if maybe like his right-handed swing maybe had more bat speed than the left-handed swing. I think that's always been the swing that's got a little more power, but because of the way they've screwed with the left field wall the last couple of years in Baltimore, I wonder if it maybe had an impact on
some pretty similar. I got it here.
Okay, that's good. I figured there might be, but
the left is faster than the right, but not by much.
Okay.
It's like 70.6 from the left and 69.6 from the right. So averaging like 70 year before, 69.2 versus 68.7. So, you know, within half a mile per hour, and that averages to around 69 there. 70 the year before, 70.1 and 70.3. So yeah, it's, he's like he squares it up. He doesn't chase, doesn't whiff that much. Like, that's his key, gets on base.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's gotta be disappointing. I mean, I still like him. He may not be lighting up the fantasy dollars, but you know, he's kind of a set it and forget it. Probably for a bunch of years. I don't think Bassaio's going to take his spot. Like, I don't think he's going to lose playing time in that way. So, I mean, I would consider trading as a buy low for him, maybe, if you can take the IL stint right now for the next month and a bit. You know, I would kind of be interested in Adley, especially because I think the, as you said, like the fantasy owner who has him is probably disappointed.
Probably.
Underwhelmed by his performance.
So I'm going to throw one out there to you. Can you guess, as of today, in standard 5x5 roto leagues, don't look and cheat.
Yeah.
Where would you guess he ranks among catchers on the Razzball Player Rater right now?
Let me see his stats here. 227 with 8 home runs. 29.
Not that bad. He's the 21st highest ranking catcher.
Yikes.
So it's obviously Cal Raleigh, Hunter Goodman, number two.
Nice.
Will Smith, Wilson Contreras, Logan Ohapi, Ivan Herrera, Austin Wells, William Contreras, Alejandro Kirk, who we bought the bounce back on this year, Dylan Dingler, Shea Langeliers, Carson Kelly, Yainer Diaz, Selvi Perez, and Augustin Ramirez are the top 15.
But,
he's been less valuable than Drake Baldwin this year, which is kind of remarkable. I mean, because I've had him in a 30-team league for a really long time, and kind of like you said, I set it and forget it. And now, kind of looking back on some of the numbers, it's like I could have picked up Carlos Navarez off of the waiver wire, who's outscored him so far this season for probably like $3. I didn't do it, you know.
Carson Kelly, same thing. Dylan Dingler probably as well. Yeah. It's pretty weird. Meanwhile, like Sean Murphy, Keeper Ruiz, Gabriel Moreno, they're all tanking as well. It's very, very interesting.
It's sort of, in my opinion, plays like right into the whole idea that catchers in fantasy are kind of overrated, particularly in dynasty when we're talking about prospects. You know, I think in a real life setting, like when we're doing the real top 100 list, you know, based on, you know, scouting grades and all sorts of stuff, like I think we maybe underrate catchers a little bit, especially catchers who can hit. For fantasy, I think it's the opposite. I think sometimes we overrate catchers just because we know, like, you don't need to keep those guys in your minors. You can kind of find a catcher. No?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think if you have the catcher who, like William Contreras, maybe not so much this year, but who will get 500 to 600 plate appearances, then like it's such a huge advantage when you hit on that guy. Like having Hunter Goodman this year is so huge right now. Mm-hmm. But if you invested in JT Realmuto or Yiner Diaz, you're disappointed for sure. So it is tough. I think if we looked, I think from a dynasty point of view, what you're saying is absolutely correct. I think there's also a kind of carryover. The real life lists have the catchers ranked highly. And so just because those are the public lists, often they, it kind of carries over and assume that they're, you know, people you want. Joey Bart, you want to pick up Joey Bart in a dynasty league just because he's, you know, ranking highly. And because they're so valuable in real life, having a good catcher, that it's probably not worth investing in dynasty leagues, especially because there's so many that are like kind of serviceable now that are good. So it's kind mm-hmm. of that advantage is gone. But yeah, I could easily see, next year the pendulum will swing and people are not going to invest in catchers for the exact reason. They got burned because they took Adley Rutschman in the fifth round or whatever it is, Sal Perez in the sixth, and he's like the 20th catcher. And I think they'll overswing. I think they'll overcorrect. And so, you know, maybe it's an opportunity in redraft leagues next year to kind of do take a catcher next year early, because people are not going to, well, not early, but take advantage of the fact that the value is going to drop and you can pick up catchers maybe for cheaper.
Absolutely. All right. I like it. Let's finish the show off with a couple of names I want to call out from your most recent RoboScout article, typically coming out on Sunday evenings before your fab goes live, unless you're in some crazy league that runs fab at 8 o'clock at night Eastern time. And then you probably have like an hour to look at it. And I'm sorry, tell them to push the clock back to 10. Gage Stanifer, really interesting arm guy that I saw a couple years ago, looked way up this year in spring, and it's continued to follow through. He's now in high A, he's really performing, and RoboScout likes him.
Yeah, Gage Stanifer, I kind of I cheated on my article and just basically cited what you'd written in your 5 breakout pitching prospects who've raised their stock. Since mid-90s on a four-seam fastball, 20 inches of IVB, go-to secondary is a mid-80s slider / curve, also throws a changeup. The key with Stanifer is the strikeout. So if you look at high A, 21-year-olds and under, since 2006, minimum 20 innings, and look at the top pitchers in terms of strikeout percentage. Number one, Kyle Harrison, age 20, had 50%. Hayden Younger of Toronto, in his age 20 season, had a 46%. Grayson Rodriguez, 45.5%. Daniel Espino, 45.1%. And then Gage Stanifer, 44.9% this year as a 21-year-old. Down the list a bit further, Travis Cora from this year. John Gray was on this list. Michael Kopach, Elite Paralis. So, you know, there's some names in here. The key thing for young pitchers in the lower levels is the strikeout rate. So even though his high A walk rate is 14% right now, that's not necessarily a red flag. The strikeout rate is more important. And as I just cited, he's crushing it. So, I mean, if you kind of do projections on him, as a 21-year-old in the majors. How will he do in his age 27 season? It's pretty good. It's like a sub 4 ERA, 1.23 WHIP, 26% strikeout, 9% walk rate. Basically solid. So, I mean, you talked about it with JJ in the AL East Prospect Show, how the Jays pitching with Treya Savage and Cal Steven and Johnny King. I mean, Gage Sanifer is kind of crushing it too. So the Jays pitching looks like it's in good shape for the next, starting 2026, 2027 will be pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to talk to their new minor league pitching coordinator tomorrow morning. So might get some more info, learn about some guys. Maybe they got down in the Dominican Summer League because he's down there right now. Last guy I want to ask about here is Esmerlin Valdez. I believe he leads the minor leagues in home runs right now, Dylan. Should we be buying in fantasy?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. I think it's 19 home runs. He had always shown the pop. Even back in the DSL, it was like it was top of the scale pop. It was kind of the contact is what you needed. And, you know, in high A right now, he is, let's see, he's seventh. He's ahead of Kevin McGonigal. He's ahead of George Lombard Jr. He's ahead of Max Clark. So obviously very good company there. Obviously the home runs is what is driving most of that. But yeah, I mean, he is probably a corner outfielder / first baseman. So, you know, real life prospect, not the greatest. It's not the greatest profile, but he's projecting to be an above average major league bat, like by WRC plus 25 to 30 home run power that will obviously play. His contact isn't so bad. So I think he's kind of in the, maybe this is too much, but like Junkensi Noel type of thing. So like it is playable in fantasy. The power is so good that, you know, he should make it to the majors. He may not be, you know, the hit and hit for power guy that you kind of want. But, you know, I think he'll be a playable guy. Definitely in like 250 minor league, maybe 200 minor league prospects. You should be picking him up for sure.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily disagree with that either. I think he's kind of interesting. But, you know, you're not going to go crazy, of course. But I think definitely needs to be rostered in, like, moderately deep leagues. It's probably the best way to put it, right?
Yeah.
Like, not super deep, but as you said, you know, sort of that 250 prospect, you know, range or whatever. Really interesting player. And I'm glad that we have tools like RoboScout to contextualize it, Dylan. Thanks for joining me here. Talked a lot. We started off fighting about Mizziarowski and Burns, and we ended singing Kumbaya about Valdez. So, full circle. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. For Jeff, for Dylan. See you guys next week.
Cheers.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.